Hello, and welcome to the My Heart and Mind podcast, where it's all about creating the feel-good mindset so you can make the most of every moment and reap the benefits of getting the most happiness out of life. And now, over to your host, Sally Crawley.
Welcome to episode 18 of the My Heart and Mind podcast. Today's episode, I'm interviewing Tony Richin-Smith. In January 2020, Tony decided to change his career and pursue his passion working as a dog behaviourist. It was probably not the best time to become self-employed, but he made the best of things and got on with life. Little did he know that in February 2021, his health and life were again to be turned upside down. Tony tells us about the day when his heart attack started and how he thought he had COVID, so he went home and took himself off to bed. Later, after a call to 111, the ambulance was called and Tony was taken to hospital having a major heart attack. This was particularly hard on all the family. Not only was Tony seriously unwell, but his wife and family weren't able to be with him while he was hospitalised. It was over 4 hours before he could get word out that he was okay. And again, more difficulties after discharge as there was no cardiac rehabilitation and very little contact with his doctor. Tony explains how he felt and still feels as this interview was only 4 months after his heart attack. He shares with us what he learned from the experience, how he has remained positive and his tips that have helped him through his recovery. So with no further ado, here's Tony. I'd like to welcome Tony Richin-Smith to the show today. So hi Tony, I'm so glad you can be here. I understand that you had a heart attack during COVID and it has made an impact on your life. So what I would like you to do is, could you start off by telling me just a little bit about your life before your heart attack?
Yeah, hi Sally, thanks for inviting me on first of all. This is great. So I'm Tony. I'm 52 years old. I live in Lancashire in the northwest of England, and I have a family. I have two kids who are still at home, and I have two dogs as well. And in January 2020, I made the big decision to leave my IT job of 34 years, which was very, very stressful, to concentrate on doing dog behaviour full time. And then about 3 weeks after that, COVID hit, which is not exactly the best time to try and do your own business when you're going into people's homes and you're suddenly told you're not allowed to go into people's homes. So I started working at a local supermarket on the checkout and filling shelves and doing deliveries, completely different to what I'd ever done before, as part-time to try and get some work, get some money in, and absolutely loved it. So I've kind of been, before the heart attack, I've been doing 3 days at the supermarket and then the rest of the time I've fit the dog business around that. Okay. And that's pretty much where we were up to February.
Yeah. So it was February that you had your heart attack. So do you want to tell us what happened?
Yeah. You know, you get those days where you just probably never forget them. You'll always remember what you were doing at the time, where you were and stuff. I think that's one of those days. I mean, I'm nearly 4 months out now, so it's still relatively recent anyway. So I was at the supermarket during my normal Friday shift, and that shift was 6 o'clock till 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And at about 20 past nine, I just finished doing the fruit and veg delivery. And I went into the staff room to have my break, sat down. And generally, I sweat quite a bit when I'm doing the deliveries because it's a very physical job. But then I wasn't stopping sweating. I was still sweating and I started to sweat more. So I had some cold water and it didn't go away. It didn't change. Nothing happened. And then I felt a bit sick, but I kind of think that might have been the amount of cold water that I was drinking. But I was just sweating like mad. It was horrendous. So after about 5 minutes, I did that thing that they always said that you probably shouldn't do. I decided to go and sit on the toilet for a bit. I thought that was probably a good thing to do, you know, just to get out of the situation where there was other people, be on my own for a bit. Anyway, that I did a bit of dry retching over the toilet, but was still sweating like mad. So I thought, this is no good. I'm going to have to go and stand outside for a bit. Now, bearing in mind that it was still early in the day, it was, you know, about 25 to 10 by this point. I should have been back on my shift by this point. So I just said to one of my colleagues, "Look, I'm just going to be outside for a bit because I don't feel very well." There was still frost on the ground outside, so it was really cold outside. And the sweat is literally pouring off me by this point. And I, to this day, I still thought I had COVID. I actually thought that I'd suddenly hit that fevered state where, you know, I was, but I was really cold. I wasn't warm or anything, but I was just sweating like mad. And then I got a bit of indigestion, and it was just right in the center of my chest. And it just felt like a tiny, tiny bit of indigestion. There was nothing else. You know, nothing that I would have put to being anything other than just a bit of indigestion. So the manager came out and he went, "Oh, you don't look very well." And I was like, "Yeah, I don't feel very well either." So so I had a cup of tea, didn't feel any better. So then I went back inside after about 5-10 minutes, and the supervisor was in the staff room. I said, "Look, I'm real sorry, I'm going to have to go home. I just don't really feel at all well." And she went, "Yeah, you look very, very grey. How are you getting home?" So I work 10 minutes away from where I live. So I walk to work generally. And I went, "I'm going to ring my wife, I think, because she's at home." My supervisor said, "Yeah, it's a good idea. But whatever you do, don't try and walk home because you really don't look well." And, you know, it was up a hill and everything. So I went, no, you're all right. I won't. Thinking to myself all the time, "Yeah, I'll probably just walk home if she doesn't answer, because that's what I do." You know, I've never really been ill as such. So I'm sat outside on a stack of pallets, ringing my wife. She didn't answer the phone. So I rang her again. She still didn't answer the phone. So then I remembered that my 18-year-old daughter was in the house, so I rang her, and she got a moment. She said, "Right, you know, come pick me up." "Yeah, no problem." Came to pick me up. By the time she picked me up, I was just feeling really, really ill, but it was just the sweating. I was really cold. I was shivering. So I got home, and by this point, my right wrist started to ache. So not my left, you know, none of the things that you expect, none of the signs that you would expect. And I just said to her, "I'm going to bed. I feel terrible. I'm going to bed. I think I might have COVID. I'm better out of the way, you know." So I went to bed, laid in bed for a bit. About 15 minutes later, wife came in. She said, "How are you feeling?" I went, "I'm still really, really cold. I'm still sweating. The pain in my wrist is now the whole of the lower half of my right arm up to my elbow." But it wasn't like a sharp pain or anything, which was just why it was really, really bizarre. It was just like an ache that just was getting worse. So she went, "Right, I'm going to ring 111. So I went, "Right, okay, yeah, whatever." So she rang 111, and she started telling them how it felt, what was going on. And as soon as she said, "He's sweating like mad, very cold and clammy," lady on the other side of the line said, "I think you better ring for an ambulance. He might be having a heart attack." Now, my wife's an ex-nurse, so she's not, you know, she's not, she knows, she knows medical stuff. And she went, "Really? No, can't believe that. You know, it's not his left arm, you know, it's his right arm, and he's okay, he's chatting away, but he just feels really bad." Okay, right, well, yeah, we're going to send an ambulance. So, right, ambulance came out, paramedics came out. wired me up, gave me an ECG. And I'll never forget, because I'm sat up in bed by this point. I'm still cold, but I'm chatting away to them. And they went, "Can confirm, Mr. Richard Smith, you are actually having a heart attack." And I was like, okay, this is not what I was expecting. I saw my wife's face. I've got a 11-year-old son who's on the autistic spectrum as well. He was sat at the end of the bed. He's going, "But my dad can't be having a heart attack because he doesn't smoke. You know, he's pretty healthy, blah, blah, blah." And I saw my wife's face and I was like, okay, this is now real, you know. And it was just, it was just bizarre. The whole situation was bizarre. I mean, they said, "Right, we're going to get some morphine in," because they said, "How's your arm?" And I said, "Well, at this point, if you give me a knife, I'll chop my arm off. It's that sore." But again, it was an ache. It wasn't, it worst case was, I would say that it was like a burning sensation, but it wasn't a sharp pain or anything. It was just, it was really annoying. And I just couldn't sort of put my arm in any sort of position that eased it. So I was like, "Yeah, I'm ready to gnaw my own arm off now because it really sore." So they went, "Right, we'll get some morphine." There was an issue with the morphine, and I don't actually know what it is. I never found out what it was, but there was something to do with they didn't have the key, or they didn't have enough stocks or something. So they had to call another ambulance. So then I got this surreal situation where I've got four paramedics stood around the bed and a trainee paramedic all stood there staring at me whilst I'm laid in bed, pretty much completely naked, with my legs sticking out one end because there's the wires going to the ECG machine. I've got wires at the top half. I've got my wife stood at the end of the bed. My son stood at the end of the bed. And they're all just staring at me, and I'm chatting away, laughing, joking, you know. And they're like, "No, we need to get you to the hospital." And I was like, "All right, okay." So they went, "The only problem is your stairs are a little steep, so we're not really sure how we're going to manage this." And I went, "It's all right, I'll get up. I'll walk down." And they went, "No, you're not." And I went, "But I, you know, I'm fine now. I'm still cold, but I can walk." And they went, "No, we don't want to put any extra pressure on your heart." So I went, "Okay, so what are we going to do?" They went, "Do you think you'll be able to go down on your bum?" Well, you know, that was it, really. I was just like, "Yeah, you know, why not? You know, it can't get any worse." So I had my dressing gown thrown at me, and I'm covering myself up best I can. Gets out of bed, walks really slowly to the top of the stairs, and I'm down the stairs on my backside. Everything flying everywhere. It was crazy. And then they put me in a wheelchair and wheeled me into the back of the ambulance. And it was that point that everything really changed, because my wife couldn't come with me. Because of COVID, you know, like, "You can come behind us." And she went, "Well, I can't because I've got, you know, our son." So they said, "Well, do you want to come in the ambulance and say goodbye to your husband?" Like, and she went, "Oh, do I have to?" You know, like, because we joke all the time, you know, it's like, "Oh God, do I have to go in and say bye?" And that was it. I was filling up by this point, because it was like, this is really serious now, more serious than I thought. So so she came in and said to you, and "What's going to happen?" And they said, "Right, well, it's all organised, because unbeknownst to me, whilst I was coming down the stairs, the other ambulance crew had rung Blackpool Victoria, which is like a really good cardiac specialist hospital in our area. And they arranged everything. So I got told, "Right, you're going to Blackpool now. You'll be in Blackpool in 30 minutes. Now, it normally takes about 45 minutes. So, you know, blue lights. Mm-hmm. We're going to blue light you to Blackpool. You'll be there in 30 minutes. You're going straight on the table." And I went, "What now?" And they went, "You're going straight on the table, and they're going to do an angiogram. They're going to have a look inside and see what needs to be done." And I was like, Okay, fine. So I was desperately trying not to crack up by this point. Unfortunately, the lady paramedic who was sat in the back with me, she was brilliant, absolutely great. She kept me talking all the way, which, as you can probably guess, isn't really that difficult for me, because once I start talking, I do tend to talk a lot. So we were talking about all sorts. And I just remember saying to her at one point, so I guess heart attacks are, I know heart attacks are pretty serious, but on the scale of seriousness, how serious is this one? And she said, well, yeah, you're right. All heart attacks are serious. And she said, and sorry, because I feel like I'm just about to start cracking up again here. So
that's okay.
If I start, then apologies. She said, this is as serious as it gets. She said, if we're right, it's the left-hand side of your heart.
Mm-hmm.
And that is really, really serious. So I was like, okay. So the next thing I knew, I'm being wheeled down the corridor at Blackpool. And it's funny, the things you remember, because this, the male paramedic driver, was guy who took me in, said, you're all right, you're going in the shed. And I was like, you are? He went, yeah, you're going in the shed, because all the labs are full. So they've got this, like, and it wasn't a shed. Well, it was the best decked out shed I've ever seen, if it was a shed, but it was like a cath lab in a shed. And they went, yeah, the shed's ready for you. You're going in the shed. So I'm like, right, okay. So I'm being swabbed for COVID, and I'm being told, you know, you've got to give us this, do this consent form for us. And these are the dangers, you know, and it might end in sudden death and all this lot. And are you okay? And I went, well, what choice do I have? You know?
You're filling me with so much confidence.
Absolutely. But if I don't, then, you know, I'm pretty much dead anyway. So I went, yeah, just do what you need to do. Just get on with it, you know. So they did. And, you know, an hour and a half later, I was in recovery. And it was just weird. I'd had an angiogram, and they'd placed one stent in my left anterior descending artery, which is the main one that feeds the left-hand side of the heart. Mm-hmm. Obviously, the left-hand side of the heart is the one that pumps oxygen all the way around the body. And they said, yeah, it's 100% blocked. And if we hadn't done this, you'd have been dead. And that was that, you know. And I was like, right, okay. By which point, you know, the morphine and everything had kicked in really well, and you know, I was just, yeah, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But then I was in hospital for 3 days, and I couldn't see anybody.
So that must have been really difficult for you, because COVID, the way they were treating you in the hospital, and the fact that you had no contact with your family and your wife.
Oh,
how was that?
It was. I don't do hospitals anyway, which doesn't help. I can't remember the last time I went into hospital as a patient. I think I must have been a kid. So it was a new experience for me anyway. I didn't have my family around me. My family couldn't come and see me because of COVID. I had to wear a mask 24 hours a day.
Mm.
I had to sleep in the mask. I could only take the mask off when I was actually eating. And I went into CCU, which is like the high dependency unit for cardiac stuff. And there were people coming in, and then they were going out, and the door was being shut, and I was so on my own.
And it must have been really scary, because at that point we didn't know what COVID, the impact and everything, and having a major heart attack and then being on your own.
Yeah. Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, you know, working at the supermarket, and now I've worked there for just over 12 months. You know, I started in roughly January 2020, and, you know, obviously February 2021. So I knew about COVID, mm-hmm. and I knew about the dangers, but I'd never needed to have a test. In the whole of that time, I never had that test. I had three whilst I was in hospital with my heart attack. So that was scary as well. To begin with, my phone was in my overnight bag, so I couldn't even get to my phone to text my wife to say that everything was okay. They had no idea what was going on for a good 4 or 5 hours.
Yeah, they must have been beside themselves.
Yeah. It was just like, you know, when the astronauts went around the moon and they were out of radio contact for, you know, however long it was. Yeah, she had no idea what was going on. I mean, yes, fair enough. She could have rung the ward, she could have rung the hospital, but there was just so much going on, and she was trying to field the kids. And you know, we have 4 children between us, and 2 of them have left home, and they all just descended on her. You know, she rang them all, and they just all descended on her. So they were there for her support network, but she had no idea what was going on. And I felt really bad, not for me, but I felt really bad for the family, because even though I might not have known what was going on, I still knew I was in the right place.
Yeah, so you couldn't reassure them.
But I couldn't reassure them and say, look, it's okay, it's all been done. So, yeah, it was about 5 hours later when I actually managed to get hold of her. Okay. So, yeah, it was just bizarre.
Strange times that we live in, isn't it?
Oh, God, yeah.
So you were in for 3 days, and then you came home. How was that for you?
Yeah, it's the thing with COVID is that it's sort of delayed everything, and it's changed the way that everything's been done. So the day after I'd had my angiogram, I got moved onto the main cardiac ward, and I was in a little bay with 2 other guys. I met 2 other guys. They're fantastic guys, Will and Jim. I know they're going to be listening to this. We got on really, really well. I mean, there's a bit of an age difference between us. It was in the height of the rugby Six Nations, and we all watched it on our own little TVs, and we were all complaining at the refs and stuff. So we got on really well, and we stayed in touch since then.
That's great.
And we message each other every single day, even just to say, hi, guys, hope you're all right. What's the weather like? You know, and it's great, because it's just that little bit of connection with each other. So when I got home, it was all just, well, I just felt like I was in limbo, because I got the discharge notes from the hospital. The discharge notes didn't really say a huge amount. You know, not as much as I was kind of hoping that they would say. I was told that I couldn't do cardiac rehab because they weren't doing it at the moment because of COVID. And I couldn't see my doctor because of COVID. So the best I could hope for was a telephone conversation with my GP. And everything just felt like it had just been extended. And I was just in limbo. And in some ways, I still feel like I am, you know, because we're only just starting to get through it now. I actually start cardiac rehab on the 1st of June.
Right, not long then.
No, but that's 4 months after the event. Now, I know that Jim hasn't had cardiac rehab. He got a manual and a DVD and a couple of phone calls. And Will hasn't had any cardiac rehab at all. And the 3 of us are from different NHS regions.
Yeah.
So it's interesting to see how each region is doing it differently. I had a couple of phone calls first. And I think the only reason why I'm on the cardiac rehab, to be honest, is because I've made a bit of a pain of myself. Because
you were an advocate of yourself.
Something like that, yeah. I was so worried, really. I mean, I'm still worried now, but I have been so worried, and emotionally, I can't tell you, emotionally, it's just been horrendous, really. So I've been ringing the cardiac team and quite a lot. And we spoke to the consultant secretary to try and get information. Of course, I forgot to tell you that the as soon as I'd had the angiogram, the consultant sort of came past me and he said, right, we've done this, but you need to come back in 6 weeks to get another stent.
All right.
So
your journey hadn't ended then.
Sorry, it hadn't ended then, no. So I'm sat at home waiting for this new thing and saying, well, what can I do? What exercise can I do? And people are saying, well, you know, you can walk 5 minutes or you can walk 10 minutes or don't do anything.
Mm.
So almost for 2 months, I've not really been able to do anything. Because I'm one of these that if I'm given clear instructions, I'll follow them. You know, it's like it's very much like COVID. The government says, don't go and visit people. I won't go and visit people.
Absolutely.
You know, yeah. Because that is the rules. And I don't want to put myself at risk and I don't want to put other people at risk, especially after the heart attack. It's really made me think.
Mm-hmm.
So when I'm told you can't really do a lot of exercise, I really haven't been doing any exercise. I haven't been trying to push myself or anything. I've not started back at the supermarket yet.
Yeah.
And I'm nearly 4 months out.
But the 4 months have been very, very different. I remember when I had my heart attack, I was isolated because I had my leg in a plaster cast. And for me, it was, I didn't know anyone. I couldn't have conversations with people. I just felt scared. And again, like you, I didn't know what to do, what I could do. Mm. I was told I couldn't use my crutches. I had to be in a wheelchair. And it really does make you feel so alone and so, well, just that knowing that you're not invincible, I think, is one of the things that's quite shocking. So, yeah, I mean, and then you had the COVID on top, or not you having COVID, but, you know, what was going on in the world.
Yeah.
So you mentioned your emotions. How have you been feeling, and have you had any support from anybody?
It's been... I know this is a really overused term, but it has been an absolute roller coaster.
Mm.
It's some days, you know, the week after my heart attack, I felt great. Physically, I felt great.
Mm-hmm.
Hardly any side effects from all the tablets that I'm on, apart from being absolutely icy cold every day. But other than that, I felt great. I felt like I could do anything. And then I'd go and walk 5 minutes with the dogs and I'd be absolutely shattered. And I think that's it. Maybe I can't do everything. But I'm very, very positive. I've always tried to stay positive. I do truly, truly believe that I am so lucky with all this. I have been so lucky. Everything just kind of fell into place at the right time because there'd never been any symptoms or any signs or anything beforehand. It was totally out of the blue, but we managed to get there quick. We managed to get everything sorted out. And I'm so lucky that I've actually managed to come home to see my family.
Yeah. The NHS are amazing, aren't they?
Oh, in a crisis, you cannot beat the NHS. Absolutely. Yeah. After crisis has gone, yeah, not so good.
And yeah, I figure that you had some issues when you went back in for the extra stent. So tell us about that. How did that go?
I'm certainly not an NHS basher. I think the NHS is fantastic. But yeah, so I was told that my circumflex artery was also blocked and it would need stenting. And that was the reason why I was going back in 6 weeks. So that would take us to about 16th of April, I think it was. So the week before I went in for my pre-admission assessment,
mm-hmm.
and I saw the consultant's notes there on the desk. So I asked the sister if I could go through them with her. And she's like, yeah, okay, yeah, not a problem. Because by this point, I'm thinking, I've done loads of research myself, you know, I've been on the British Heart Foundation and been on Facebook groups and stuff. So I know quite a lot, but I still didn't actually know how it was going to go for me.
Yeah.
So I went through and I saw this little diagram that the consultant had very nicely drawn. And she said, yeah, she said, so this is your anterior, left anterior descending. This was totally blocked. I've since found out that, especially in America, because of the positioning of it, they call it the Widowmaker.
Yes.
Like at that. The top of the LED. So I would class myself as even more lucky for that. And she said, and this is circumflex, and this is like 80% blocked. I went, right, and that's what they're going to stent. And she said, yeah. And then she said, but they've also noticed that your left main artery is about 60% blocked. So they want to do a wire pressure test when you go in to see what the blood flow is like through there. So I was like, all right, okay, fair enough. So I came home to tell my wife and told work and everything that I might actually be having two stents, not just going in for one, I might actually end up with two. So the day came, I went in, and they did the angiogram. They went through, they did the wire pressure test. It was about 40, 45 minutes long. Everything was fine. They came out. Consultant walked past and said, right, yeah, you're all done. We've not put a stent in. And I was like, okay. And why not? And they went, yeah, not needed. All right, that's fine. But then it disappeared. And I went back to the recovery room, and I was sat there for about 4 hours, and nobody came to talk to me. They just came to check, you know, the pressure band that you have around you, around your wrist. Yeah. So they came to check that, and they just kept checking my blood pressure and kept telling me to drink more water and drink more water, and your blood pressure is a bit low, drink more water. So I drank all this water by about 4 o'clock, and I'd been there since 8:30 in the morning. So by 4 o'clock, they said, right, you can go home. And I was, right, is nobody going to come and talk to me about, you know, what happened and everything? And they went, no, yeah, you've had the wire pressure test. Everything looks fine. You can go home. All right. Okay. So by this point, I'm feeling a little sick as well. And we think that it was a reaction to, I think it was midazolam that I had, like a bit of a relaxant. And I think it was that made me feel a bit sick. But of course, by this point, I just wanted to go home. You know, I'd been in there all day with lots of other people. And, you know, to be fair, some of the people you wouldn't really spend a lot of time with if you had the choice. And because obviously no one was going to speak to me because they were just really busy, I thought, no, I just need to go home. So my wife came and picked me up, and I sat in the car, and as we'd got about 10 minutes down the road, and I threw up in the car. So, and then I threw up constantly for the next 8 hours, and I couldn't keep anything down. I couldn't drink water or anything. So it was that bad that by 11 o'clock, another ambulance, it was called, came to the house.
Yeah. I can imagine you were worried out of your mind, and your wife must have just...
Totally, really, really worried. My son's there going, oh, God, here we go again, you know. And I'm like, no, it's not the same. And I just, in between bouts of being sick, I just said to her, look, I'm really glad that I didn't have the stents in the end, because I don't know what damage I might have done with all this retching that I was doing. Anyway, everything from that side of it was fine. It all settled down after a while, and I didn't have to go back to hospital, so that was good. But this was a Friday again. It was another Friday. So I couldn't speak to anyone then until Monday, because everyone had finished for the weekend.
So you're just in limbo.
Yeah, so I'm still in limbo, yeah. So I'm trying to, because then my brain's starting to work, and I'm thinking, so I know they've said that my left main didn't need the stent. What about the circumflex?
Mm.
Nobody's mentioned this since. You know, is it 80% blocked? Is it not blocked? Did for some amazing reason they didn't notice the circumflex the second time they went in? You know, and I know that's really awful to say that about absolute professionals, but you just, all sorts of things go through your head.
Absolutely. When you're in fear and you don't know what's going on, your imagination runs away with you.
Yeah, absolutely. So I tried to ring the GP on Monday, couldn't get through to the GP, rang the cardiac rehab team. They didn't have my results because it was too soon, because obviously the results hadn't come through quick enough. So we ended up speaking to the consultant secretary. She then had to find the notes because she didn't have them to hand. So she had to ring us back. And then she said, no, everything's fine. There was no intervention required at this time. So what does at this time mean exactly? You know, does this mean that it's still blocked? Does this mean that it's not blocked? Does this mean that I might have to go back for another one? No, nobody's been able to answer that question for me because I haven't been able to speak to the consultant yet, because I haven't got my follow-up for maybe another 2 months. So I'm still in limbo.
Yes. So would you say that not knowing is one of the most difficult things that you've had to deal with through this?
Absolutely. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, and I know COVID has not helped the situation because everything, like I said earlier, has been delayed. But yes, not knowing has been, it's been absolutely, I was going to say it's been the killer, but that's probably not really appropriate. But it,
yeah, it's humor. Good.
it's not been good at all. And it's been hard for my wife. It's been very hard for my wife because she's obviously been at home. You know, she's had to self-isolate before I went in for the second angiogram because we both had to self-isolate for 10 days before I went in. And every time I've had a bit of a twinge or every time I've got breathless or every time I've even looked a bit funny, she's gone, are you okay? And you could tell that she's worried about it.
Yeah.
And I'm trying not to get cross because I think I'm okay. I just need to be able to do. I just need to be able to get on and do. And my body's going, no, you can't.
Yeah. Mind is willing, but the body's just not quite ready yet.
That's it. Yeah. And, you know, Facebook is, it can be really good. And I'm on some pretty good groups. But it's also not great when you hear people say, And this is nothing against anybody else because I know we're all different. But when you hear people saying, yeah, I had a heart attack on Friday, I was back at work on Monday.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and people saying, I've just had to get on with it and I went back a week later and everything. And I'm sat there month after month, 4 months out now going, I'm still not back at work. And now I feel worse than I did after it happened. Because mentally and emotionally, I'm kind of a wreck now. Now, with everything going on and not knowing, now, there is the potential that I'm actually on the spectrum slightly as well, or a lot, depending on who you talk to. And so I got really upset about not being able to get any sort of information. So I managed to ring my doctor. And my GP is fantastic. She's really good. And she said, right, I totally understand everything you're saying. And what we tend to see is that the emotional impact of this sort of event happens about 3 months afterwards. So you might be perfectly fine before that, but round about 3 months, we start seeing it. You're right on that point. She's told me that she would prefer me to stay off work for 6 months. She says it can take up to a year for everything to heal properly. You know, and bearing in mind that all I've had is a stent.
But it's not just the stent, it's the whole emotional, mental and physical impact of an event like that.
Yeah.
And so as you say, it doesn't just affect us, it affects everybody that's living with us and around us. It's huge.
Definitely. I would say that the emotional side of it is the biggest thing that's impacted us as a family. Mm-hmm. And I also think that it's the one thing that is sadly neglected with cardiac patient care.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I guess that's down to funding, I guess, you know, because everyone's aware of it.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, we all speak, and but it's a priorities thing. And your case is, and many others, is so different because it's amplified. You would have been around in cardiac rehab, which would have helped you because you'd have been with other people with similar experiences. Yeah. You would have been supported by the nursing team and the exercise team. You'd have been able to voice how you were feeling.
Yeah.
And that would help. But I, as you know, I agree. And I think not only do we need, I say our bodies need fixing, but it's dealing with it afterwards because it is such a shock. Like I speak to so many people and it's like, what, me? You know, especially when you don't smoke and you don't drink that much. And
absolutely, yeah, yeah. I mean, because that's it. I mean, they all kept saying to me, oh, how old are you? Do you smoke? No, haven't smoked for over 30 years. And even then, I wasn't a very good smoker in my 20s. You know, I was pretty rubbish. Do you drink? I have one bottle of beer a week. I've since found out that the beer that I have been drinking as well has been dark ale, which is actually probably better for me than anything I could have had other than red wine. Mm-hmm. So even that's good. My diet wasn't great, but it wasn't really bad either. I was about 1.5 to 2 stone overweight. Not ridiculous. My cholesterol was 5.7, which again is over what they want, which is 5, but nothing ridiculous. No history in the family that I'm aware of. So it was, we all think that it's probably more stress related.
Yeah.
Because of the previous jobs and stuff. But yeah, other than that, I was pretty healthy. So emotionally, it has been a big shock to the system, really.
Mm. So, yeah. What have you found? I mean, I do know it's really early days for you because you're only 4 months in and, you know, going by my own experience and other people I've spoken to, you know, that is just so soon. But is there anything that you found that has helped you manage in these extraordinary circumstances as well as having to deal with being a recovering heart attack patient?
Yeah, I mean, my family's been great. I mean, my family is just, They're one in a million, really. They're all just brilliant. My wife, we talk a lot. We've become a lot closer, I would say, now. I mean, we've always been close, but we've been really close. We've only managed to have one argument since February, which is pretty good. And I think that was just like an overflow of all the emotions that was going on. However, saying that, and she would agree with me if she was here, that she doesn't understand it all because she's not been through it. And let's hope she never has to go through it because, you know yourself, it's not something that anybody wants to go
through. No, you wouldn't choose it.
No. So the thing that I've found that's helped me is just being able to talk to people.
Mm.
And just random people. Just anybody. I mean, it's just as well that I've not been working at the supermarket because I would have bored the customers to death talking about it. I am happy to talk to anybody about everything that's happened. Mm. And it's quite funny because we've met loads of people in the street and people who I'm acquainted with but wouldn't say that I would normally stop and talk to them. They all know because it's a small village-ish. And they all say, how are you doing and stuff? And I said, yeah, it's fine. So then we get talking. Every single person who I've spoke to has said that it's made them reevaluate their own life purely because we're all of a similar age.
Yeah.
And it just seems to, if me talking about what's happened to me has helped me, and if it helps one or two other people, then that's, you know, that's great.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it does. It makes people stop in their tracks literally and think, I would never have thought that Tony would. So hang on a minute, I need to look after myself and think heart first in a way. So you mentioned you've got dogs.
Yeah.
Did you find that having animals, particularly dogs, were good company for you?
Yeah, that's helped as well. I mean, I've not been able to do any of the dog business or not much of it, but just being able to go out with them for, you know, 5-10 minutes has just been great. And they're just around the house and, you know, they're so calm.
They are, aren't they? Apart from mine when it starts barking, but hey.
Well, I've got one on either sofa at the moment and they're both just flat out asleep.
Oh, love them. So is there anything that you'd like to share with the people that are listening who may have either be in the circumstances that you are in or may even be caring and looking after people that might help them in their journey? I know talking and I just saw you stroking your dog then. Hey guys, we're on video.
yeah, of course. I think the first thing is ask questions. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter where you are at the time and who you're talking to, but if you've got a question that's bugging you, you need to ask it. So one of the things that I wish I'd have done was I wish I'd have asked more questions. Knowing what I know now and being in limbo for so long, I have so many questions that I really want to ask. But now I feel like I've kind of missed the opportunity in some ways.
I don't think you have. Maybe that you're just settling because you know you haven't got it. But it's quite interesting when you were saying that, you know, you feel powerless and that you want the information, because having a heart attack, having a heart bypass operation, at that point you are completely out of control. And they say information, knowledge is power. And by knowing what's going on, it makes you feel a little bit more confident, which I think is what you're seeking. And such great advice, asking questions.
Oh, definitely. I mean, the other thing I was very, very fortunate to meet the two guys in hospital. They kept me sane.
Mm-hmm.
And the good thing is we all had the same event. So we all understand. We all know. I know that I can just pick up the phone and ring either one of them if I need to. They know they can pick the phone up and ring me if they need to. We can support each other. So even though we don't have like group therapy sessions or anything, we have that connection.
Oh, and thank goodness.
There are things like, you know, the British Heart's Facebook group and stuff. Make connections. If you find somebody, even accidentally, I mean, because we kind of met accidentally, so even accidental meetings can be really, really beneficial. So yeah, make connections with people and don't be afraid to talk about your story. You know, there's too much people not understanding. You know, the symptoms of a heart attack are completely different to what you see on the TV. They're completely different to what you read on the internet. You know, granted, everybody has slightly different or totally different symptoms, but, you know, it's not the, oh, grab your chest, fall over, and that's it. And one of the biggest things that I found was that my work colleagues at the supermarket, they've been great. They've been absolutely fantastic. But there's very much a case of, so are you fixed now? Are you all sorted? When are you coming back to work? And that's not a bad thing. They're not being nasty about it or anything, or going, oh, you know, you've been off too long, you should be back. They're genuinely concerned, but the information just isn't out there.
Yeah, they don't understand how invasive it is.
That's it. You know, I mean, I went in one day to have a chat to them, and I said, oh, do you want to see my scar? And they're like, oh yeah. And I was like, oh, I went to pull my top up, and then I pulled my sleeve, rolled my sleeve up, and showed this little tiny pinprick on my wrist. And they went, is that it?
Yeah. Went, but they do miracles through that little hole. Yeah.
So then they said, so when are you coming back? And I'm like, I don't know. Mm. I don't know. Yeah, so talk to people. Reach out to people.
Yeah. And you don't know who else has had a heart attack, because it's one of those, or even a cardiac arrest, because it's invisible.
Yeah.
You know, nobody, we don't have a sign on our heads or anything like that.
And people keep telling me I look great. They keep saying, you look brilliant. You look really good. When are you going back to work?
Mm. And then you feel guilty and pressured. Yeah. And that just adds to the anxiety and the stress and the,
Definitely. Yeah.
So what did you do while you've been recuperating and recovering? How have you filled your time?
So I haven't really been able to do much dog work, and I certainly haven't been doing any supermarket work. But before my heart attack, I was writing a book about dog behaviour. Mm. And one of the things that I was really cross with when I was in hospital was that I thought, I'm not going to finish this book. Because I had about four chapters left to write before the heart attack. And I thought, how the hell am I going to finish this book if I die? My mentality, this.
Yeah.
So I finished my book, was one of the things that I did. And that's now published on Amazon. And it's great, because if it helps one person, then mm-hmm. it's been worth it. I'm not doing it to be a bestseller. I'm not doing it to make a fortune. I'm just doing it to help people. So I've done that. I've also become a bit of a, and I don't know if I'm pronouncing this correctly, a bit of a kefir addict, a bit of a water kefir addict. So right. you know the yogurt drink that's full of probiotics and stuff that you can get.
Yes, it's fermented, isn't it?
Yes. Fermented drink. It's like fermented yogurt. Well, when I thought I had to get my cholesterol down, we tried some of this and I thought, this actually tastes pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
So then I did some research and I thought, I can't really keep drinking full fat yogurt every day, because that's not going to help anyway. So then I found out that there's a water version.
Oh, I didn't know that.
It's a different type of grain. Yeah. Apparently it comes from a Mexican cactus. There you go. Bit of information for you.
Mm-hmm.
And it is just fermented sugar water, and the idea is that the yeast and the bacteria collection, whatever they are, cluster, they eat the sugar and then they produce all the probiotic culture and lactic acid and whatever else is in there, and then you ferment it a second time and it becomes sparkly. And I thought, oh, I'm going to try that. So they're like my babies now. I'm every 2 days I'm there. It's like a new hobby now. I create this water drink, and both me and my wife drink it. We love it. We flavor it with figs and occasionally with plums. And it's just a really nice, refreshing drink.
That's awesome.
And I tell you what, I don't know if it's helped, but I had my 6-week blood test done.
Yeah.
My cholesterol was 3.03.
Wow. That's 5.7. Brilliant. Yeah.
So I'm not claiming that the kefir has done that.
No.
However, you know.
You're going to take that one.
I'm taking that one. And I'm still making it, because that is like a hobby now. My wife is... I'm eating so many vegetables and fruit now. It's just unbelievable.
That's fabulous.
You know, my lifestyle's completely changed, but it is very much we are in this together.
Yes.
So we're sort of working together, and our whole life now is around just being together, really, and just doing what we want to do.
Mm.
So,
it sounds to me that there are a couple of three positives that I've just heard that have come out of that. One is your communication and the closeness with your friends and your family, and in particular your wife. I found that I no longer, well, it's not quite true, no longer, but I didn't value things so much. It was more about people and experiences. And then it motivated you to finish your book, which is fantastic. Brilliant. More purpose in life. And then this kefir thing. And I'm going to have to ask you to give me some links that I can put in the show notes for people that A, may want to find your book, and also about the kefir, because I definitely am interested in
I will definitely. I mean, it's funny actually, talking about the communication just very quickly, is that I have lost friends as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not been all plain sailing. I don't see myself as a victim at all. I see myself as very, very, very fortunate to be in the position that I'm in, and that I didn't have to go back to work straight away, you know, and that I did get to finish my book, and that I do get to spend more quality time with my family. I also know who my friends are now as well. And some friends who I thought were friends have sort of drifted off.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know what, that's okay, that's fine. And since then I've managed to get back in touch with a really good friend of mine who I'd lost touch with for about 16 years maybe. He moved out to New Zealand. I used to work with him. We got on really, really well, lost touch. We're now back in touch.
Oh, that's excellent.
So it really prioritizes your thoughts.
It does. And like you said, people that I thought would be there weren't there for me, and friends, or they were people, just people that they just were there, and they were supportive, and they are now really, really close friends. And I think it brings something like this to mind, doesn't it? That, you know,
absolutely.
I just want to wrap up now and say, Tony, it has been an absolute honor having you on my show. I am wishing you all the best for your cardio rehab, and I have to say that I think of you as being a friend, so hopefully that we will continue our friendship after this show and onwards into the future. So thank you very much.
Oh, thank you, Sally. And yeah, definitely, you're definitely on my friends list now.
I hope you enjoyed the show today. And if you'd like to stay in touch, please pop over to Facebook and join me in the My Heart and Mind community. www.myheartandmind.co.uk/community. See you over there.
You've been listening to Sally Crawley and the My Heart and Mind podcast, a show for you if you've had a heart attack, cardiac event, or other life-changing experience and want to feel good. It's all about mastering your feelings and emotions so you can feel great and live the life you love. To find out more, visit www.myheartandmind.co.uk, and note that that's an AND and not the ampersand character. Go be magnificent.